there.
Right.
Once you decide to tell the truth, if you're going to describe what it was really like about being at the focal point of all that adulation and experience and being this guy that people perceived as this innocent and sweet and all of that, the imagery that was created around my character, Keith, in the Partridge Family, was people assumed it was me. They put my name on it. I'd be in wardrobe and costume, playing the guitar, looking real sweet. And the next thing I know, they'd be making dolls and dresses and comic books and all that. And finally, 24 years later, I decided, you know, you really should know what it was for me. During my college years, I don't know about all of you, but between the ages of 19 and 23 or 4, when I did the Partridge Family, it was really like the years that everybody else I knew went to college. I don't know if anybody can stand here and say, you know, I really conducted myself as a human being. I was very proud of myself during college. I know everybody I know was a jerk in college. And I, not being in college, had to live up to this perfect, you know, sweet, innocent, nice, he would never do, never swear. And that wasn't me. That was the character I played. So this is about the being robbed of one's own real identity and about telling the truth about what it was like to be an idol, the pressure that I felt, you know, trying to the whole generation sort of looking up to you and thinking, you know, there's a guy. I felt a tremendous responsibility. I felt unworthy of it. I didn't want the adulation. I mean, I was a guy who had a lot of problems just like everybody else. And I mean, I won't say I was a total jerk because I like people and I didn't treat people badly. I was just wild and reckless. In high school...
We're talking about sex, right?
I'm talking about sex and drugs, pal, yeah. I'm talking about in high school when, you know, during the 60s and the Summer of Love, I hitched up to Haight-Ashbury.
Right.
With my friend Kevin Hunter, who 2.5 years later died of an overdose. This was an innocence that was prevalent among the teenagers and the youth of America at the time. It was the middle of the social and sexual revolution. And it was really, you know, tune in, drop out was really a motto of ours. And it was something that I felt aligned with the whole political ideology of the whole generation. And I felt, you know, a part of it. It was really very much my consciousness. Unlike what you saw me playing a few years later on television as a professional, as an actor playing that part. I was very different and wild and reckless, and I'm talking about, yeah, sex and drugs. And I think people find it harder to believe because of me and because of my imagery that was from that. I mean, had they known at the time, that would have been, you know, shocking headlines. Now people, I think, understand and know that I'm, as an adult, I'm well, I'm healthy, I'm clean, I've been a long, long, long time of sound mind and body. And it's almost like another guy did it. It's almost like I lived another life. I retired after 5 years because I was really lost. I was really messed up. And I could no longer carry the weight of this responsibility. And the fact that I had all these young fans really played very heavily upon my decision to stop because I didn't feel worthy of it. I couldn't live up to it.
So, David, from the rest of the interview, when I ask you a question, will you give me something more than just a yes or no?
I'm happy to do that.
You know, I'm just thinking, he didn't talk about any of this when we had him on What Would You Do last year.
You had him on What Would You Do?
Yeah. You know, people still come up to me and say, you know, I've done every possible television show in the world, and people come up to me and say, like kids come up to me and say, wow, yeah, I remember you. You're on What Would You Do? What? I was on it for 17 seconds. Hi, don't miss the Partridge Family starting on Nick at Night at 8 o'clock. You know?
Did they put you through the pie wash like they did the Stretch?
No, no, they wouldn't do that. No, no, Mr. Cassidy's coming here through here. Please, please, get the pie away from him.
You can tell a guy who wears his headset upside down so he won't mess up the hair.
That's right.
Going in the
well,
pie wash.
You personally don't have to do another two
right.
or three television interviews saying, hey, what's that big lump in your head, David?
You got a wedge in your head, David. What's that all about? Now, you grew up in a showbiz family.
Yeah, I did. I sort of did. There's a little bit of a misconception about that. I was brought up in West Orange, New Jersey, with my grandparents and my mom.
Another Jersey guy.
Jersey guy.
Yeah, West Orange. And I heard somebody say that. Was that you? Who said Jersey? Who's from Jersey?
You
are where?
the shore.
Oh, yeah? Where?
My family lives in Forked River.
Oh, wow.
You heard of that, huh?
Well, no.
Tom's River.
Seaside. Tom's River. I have an aunt that lives in Tom's River now. But I used to go down to Tom's River with my grandparents and also to Belmar. And when in the 50s, we used to go to Asbury Park, which later in the 70s, you know, Bruce made it real cool and famous.
Right.
But
now in the 90s, nobody will go near it.
Exactly. I haven't seen it in a long time, but I've heard. And I just want to think of it the way I remembered it, which was it was the biggest thrill in the world to go down there because they had rides. And, you know, when you were 7, 8, 9, 10 years old, it was the deal. So, yeah, I'm from Jersey. And I was brought up in New York, very middle class. There's a picture, the last picture in the book, of me standing in front of my house. Last year we took it.
It's Christmas time or something, isn't it?
Actually, it looks that way.
Or you just keep the lights up all...
Apparently they kept the lights up all the time.
They did.
It was in November that was taken. So maybe they started real early.
Well, they had little snowflakes on the windows and everything.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it was the winter time, so November, I guess you could say it's winter. It certainly is up here.
Yeah, it is.
It is in the Northeast. It's about 40 minutes outside of Manhattan, and there's me standing in it. It's a very simple, my grandfather, who my mom and really raised me as well, worked for the public service, read meters, and I lived a very normal, unshow-busy life. So,
Seton Hall's in West Orange, isn't it?
Huh?
Isn't Seton Hall in West Orange?
Yeah, it is, in fact, uh-huh. Seton Hall's a good school, good basketball school, so...
They can play a little hoop there.
Yeah.
23 Elm Street. So who lives there now?
Well, there's a high school girl. I went back and gave a, they invited me back to my mom's alma mater. I moved out to L.A. when I was like 11.
So, oh, you did?
Yeah, uh-huh. But I was raised in West Orange till I was 11, and I don't know how you guys feel, but those are the years that you become whoever you are and as a person. And I always felt like I came from there. I've been a New York fan, and I heard you guys bashing the Knicks and the Rangers, and it pissed me off.
I think you beat up Mike right there on your left. Just whack him.
The thing about West Orange was it was so normal. It was unshow-busy. And I went back and spoke to West Orange, the kids there, just to talk to the school and say, you know, you can do anything you want to do in your life. You can dream to be anything you want, and to try and at least talk to them a little bit about the perils of drugs and alcohol and all of that, which I went through my own battle with. And it's been a long time now. I've been clean and straight and pretty well for, over 12 or 13 years.
Well, that's it. We just had Paul Williams on the show talking about that.
Yeah, you know, Paul had a big problem, too.
Absolutely. He was very, very honest about it.
Yeah, well, you have to be. And that's what this book is about. And as much as people go to the sensational stuff about, hey, well, I heard you and Susan Day, you know, did this and that.
Oh!
My life with her as a friend and as one of my closest and dearest friends and, you know, someone I love, and she was like my sister, and I never... That was not what our relationship was about. Our relationship was about that, you know, intimacy that we had as friends and as someone who I really trusted in. And in a way, we were, what you saw on the screen was a lot of what it was. It was, we used to, you know, mess with each other. I mean, I was always pretty loose during the shooting of doing that show, and I found myself always trying to loosen other people up, and I was messing around all the time. So I became the, you know, practical joker and class clown of the family. And what you saw on the screen, really, it reflected how I think what we felt about one another. There was a lot of glue there. And with Danny, too.
I would say this, that on last Monday we had Donny Osmond on the show, and we talked a great deal about Danny beating him up, as a matter of fact.
I'm sure that must be the low point in his life. The first thing you have to ask yourself is, Donny, what happened that morning when you woke up? Did you say, gee, I'm going to get in the ring with Danny Bonaducci? The guy used to be a professional kickboxer. Okay?
Who did?
Danny.
He did?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes. Okay, after he left the Partridge Family, the career didn't exactly soar.
Right.
So Danny decided, I got to make a living, and he got offered, he started becoming, I think he became a karate, like a black belt.
Right.
Okay, or a brown belt, or something. He was pretty well along in that karate world. at which point he went and became a security, like a bodyguard for some guy. This is true. He told me the story.
Right.
I had lost contact with him. This is the years, the ensuing years. I'm saying he was 18, 19, 20, 21 years old. And he went and made a movie, moved to Japan, married a Japanese girl, and then he made some kickboxing movies, and he actually had some professional kickboxing fights. So,
Donnie,
the first thing you got to say is, in all that training in the Mormon school, probably didn't work to his advantage. You know, they did not exactly teach these guys hand and foot combat.
He says he won like Jean-Claude Van Damme, though, didn't he?
I don't remember. I was doing the show. I was doing a Broadway show when this happened.
Mm-hmm.
I heard nothing about it until it was over. No one said, gee, by the way, you know, Donnie and Danny are going to fight. I thought, if people think I really, like, know Donny Osmond, he was, in the truest sense, what the teen magazines and everything portrayed him to be. He was himself. His family, they went to church, and they were sweet and very nice guy. I liked him when I met him a couple of times. Seemed like a very, very nice guy.
He is a very nice guy.
Yeah, he seemed like a very decent guy.
He's coming to do Joseph again.
I know that.
In February.
I did it on Broadway 10 years ago, coincidentally.
Was he going to do it again?
No, never. I would never. It's a great part, but it's a great show for kids and all that, but I just did Blood Brothers for a year on Broadway, which is a totally different. It's a piece of work that, you know, it's got a lot of depth and it's very powerful.
Why don't you do Phantom?
No,
Robert D. Young can do it.
Blood Brothers is actually one of the best plays, if not the best play I've ever done, and it won all the awards in England as like Cats and Phantom and Les Mis and all those awards that they brought over the British. You know, powerful musical, and it's more of a play than a musical, but it's got such a piece of work. My brother and I did it on Broadway, and in fact, I finished last Sunday, and on Sunday night, I walked off the stage at 6 o'clock, and 7:30, I was on a flight to L.A., and the next day, I was on the morning shows and Tonight Show and everything else. So I've been out for well over a week. I really miss it. As an actor, it's, you know, the most exciting piece of work I've ever done. In fact, it's going on the road, and it's coming here to Minneapolis. I don't know if I'm going to be doing it, but some of the original Broadway production is going to come here.
Can you stay here till 9 o'clock? I wanted to do you.
You'll have to ask my friend who's out there, who's taking me around the media today.
Because there's
like
so
to.
Many, many things to talk to you about.
Yeah.
I don't want to crowd it all in.
Okay.
Is there some way we can find out how late?
I'm going to be, okay, we can find out. The answer is I'll say yes, I can be here. I'm going to be tonight at, just so that any of you might be interested, at Borders in Minnetonka. Minnetonka at 7:30. Now, my itinerary, when I talked about doing this with Warner Books, they said, we're going to do all the major markets. We're going to go Los Angeles, San Francisco, Dallas, Houston, Washington, Chicago, Baltimore, Minneapolis, Minnetonka. Excuse me? Minnetonka? Wait a minute. Let's back up. Dallas, Houston, Washington, Boston, Minneapolis, Minnetonka.
Minnetonka.
I kept saying to them, where is Minnetonka? I'd never heard of Minnetonka.
You'll love this place.
So I heard in the last few days about Minnetonka. I heard it's actually here in Minneapolis,
yes,
more or less.
Absolutely.
And had they told me that, I would have felt a little more comfortable. I thought I was going to get on one of those. Go over all these lakes and stuff and end up, you know, like at a teepee reservation somewhere.
Right. You could do that, too.
Soaring Eagle welcoming David Cassidy here to Minnetonka.
You never had a Tonka truck when you were a kid?
I did.
That's where they're from.
Well, there, you know, I don't know enough about Minnesota, except I'll tell you a very interesting story about your governor when you come back, if you'd like, or if you'd like to take a break with me.
Well, I don't want to take a break yet. That's
nine is good.
9 o'clock's okay. So
okay, nine is good. We're cool.
I'd like to point out also, before we move on, that you pointed out that picture of you at 23 Elm Street.
Mm-hmm.
I was looking at a picture of you, a couple of overleaf, actually, from that picture. You are fully responsible for every hockey player's haircut in America. Every hockey player in America wears that hairstyle.
Well, I have to say that I became pretty good friends with Wayne Gretzky the last couple of years. And I mean, I would say good friends with him, but I got to know him a little bit. And And he said something to me about the hair, and I went, well, listen, I can't take responsibility for this, man, please. This isn't my fault you guys look like that.
When you went out on tour, did you enjoy that?
Which tour are you talking about? Are you talking about the 70s?
Or? Well, I just looking, yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
this book deals very seriously with those years about me, who I was, who I really was, and the ensuing years, and all of the madness that was surrounding me during the 70s, those 4.5 years, 5 years that I did that, and people perceived me as that guy. And then when they created this David Cassidy guy in people's minds, with all of the merchandising and playing Keith on television, it was very difficult for the real guy to live with it. And I started trying to, after a while, even though I didn't want to be this and I wanted people to know that I wasn't, I started becoming very concerned that if they really, that because they loved this guy, what if they got to know me? Would they really like me?
Mm-hmm.
Would they care about me? Would they look at me and think, well, no, we wanted you to be like that guy? And when you're 19, you don't really know who you are. 20, it makes one very insecure, and I became very paranoid and very frightened, and I lived in the fear and loathing of the Partridge Family Bus is very true. Hunter Thompson. Yeah.
Hunter S. Thompson. Did you ever go to the Beatles or Elvis? Because I know that you...
I've got a great John Lennon story that, I became pretty good friends with him.
You ask him about how do I handle this?
No, it was actually right at the time I was finishing, retiring. Right at the time I was starting my last tour that we started to get to know one another. We had a good mutual friend. He came to my house. Lennon came to my house on New Year's Eve, 1974. And he came over to my house at 12 o'clock. I had, stupidly, I'm talking about being a jerk in these years, okay? And I had challenged somebody to a tequila shot drinking contest. One of my friends, Susan Day, was there, and a couple of other people were there, and I got into this thing. I had like 17 straight shots of tequila.
Oh.
As a guy who didn't drink, okay,
oh.
I was out, and I passed out, and I was in my living room at midnight, 12:30, 1 o'clock in the morning, and Susan Dairman was like stroking my head, saying, it'll be okay, David, you'll be back, don't worry, you'll come back. And Lennon walked into my house with our mutual friend, and she woke me up, she said, David, there's a beetle in the house. So, I mean, she didn't really have a reference to it. Yeah,
can I ask you a question, though?
Yeah.
After 17 tequilas, did Yoko look good?
Yoko was not with him. It was at the time he did the rock and roll album, and he was out of his mind, He later said, I was completely out of his mind, so I'm not talking about him. I think that the thing about him, he was very funny and a great guy. He could be, as the stories go, he could be a jerk when he was drunk and was very unhappy at the time. And he was great with me that night. We actually went back, and we went back into, I had a big bedroom that had like a music annex to it, and we picked up a couple of guitars, and I actually got to play with him, play a lot of the Beatles songs that I knew at the time that he had actually forgotten. Stuff that I grew up with, like 13, 14 years old. I actually was sitting there playing Beatles songs with him and singing Paul's parts. Now that was one of the highlights of, they say, well, what was it like being a star? For me, it was about getting to meet one of my, probably the most biggest influences on me. Musically, because when they broke, I was 13 years old, and that's the next day after seeing them on the Sullivan Show, I picked up an electric guitar like, a million other people, and started playing. And being that guy years later that people have come up to me and said, when I saw you and I heard your records and I saw you on TV, I started playing guitar, and I just want to thank you. And I, a lot of them have become unbelievably good and very successful musicians and guitar players. And I knew what that felt like. I knew what that meant, because when I got to meet Lennon, I said the same thing to him.
So did you bring that tape from that jam session?
We didn't make any tapes.
Oh, oh.
We just sat there together and played. And in a way, it's good, because it would seem like years later, I'm sure that people would have commercially wanted to. And two drunk guys, which it was what it was. I mean, really sick drunk guys, sitting playing songs. But we played like the night before. We played a lot of those great old early Beatles songs that I remembered, I would never forget. I could still probably play now, and I haven't played them in, I don't know, 12, 15 years. But it was so great for me to actually live it and to play it and to sing it. And he had forgotten to see him, you know, like, oh, how's that bit go, you know? How's it going?
You wrote it, but you forgot how it goes.
I don't know.
We're going to have to go to a one-minute break because we only got you for a few more minutes. We want to take a break and come back, and we'll continue our conversation with David Cassidy right after this at KQRS.
Hi, I'm George Corporal. I own
in his own bedroom and everything. All about the Partridge Family. The name of the book, Come On, Get Happy, Fear and Loathing on the Partridge Family Bus. Has Hunter S. Thompson contacted you about the title yet?
No, I hope he does, though. I understand he's a really interesting cat, so I...
Oh, yeah.
He'll have a good sense of humor.
Yeah, you can only imagine. Hunter, the last time I saw him, I think he was blowing up, or he was taking riflery at a rifle range in his backyard, and he would put pictures of Jan Wenner over there and, like, shoot at him.
The old Rolling Stone editor.
Yeah.
I hated the Rolling Stone.
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, Hunter Thompson is he's an interesting character from those years. I loved that book, The Madness of that Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, and there's a little bit of that sense of being on this mad kind of acid trip, if you will. The thing I have to be clear about is that when I was a teenager, I was doing what everybody else was doing, experimenting with all that stuff. But afterwards, when I became a professional actor, and, you know, a couple of years later, I looked a lot younger, and I was playing a teenager, but I was very clean. I was a vegetarian. I didn't smoke. I didn't drink. I didn't take drugs. I had to be like that because my schedule, I worked 18 hours a day. And when people talk about me now in this book and, you know, being so revealing and so honest about what it was actually like to be the object of people's projection, their fantasy, and what it was like to carry that around with you, you know, I want to be clear so that people understand I was not a maniac abuser out there, you know, sticking needles in my arm and doing all that stuff. And I was, if anything, I was the other way. I had to stay so focused and so present so that I could be, you know, to be everything, as an actor, as a singer, as a guy doing concerts on the weekends and interviews and photo sessions and all that other stuff.
Chapter 10, David.
Uh-oh. Here comes the chapter.
You know which
chapter. Here it comes.
Brown rice
and tetracycline is what I call it.
We could pass on this if you want.
It depends upon, out of context, I suppose, it might sound rather shocking. Go. I have nothing to be ashamed of.
I understand.
But you know, the problem is if we read some of these, people might want to rush out to Borders tonight and start buying.
Yeah. That's exactly right.
That's a shock. It's been out for only a few days now, three or four days, but there's a lot of excitement about it, and I would hope people would get a sense not only of who I was, but what that time was like. We forget, since the 80s and AIDS and all of that, the world has shifted, the pendulum has shifted back the other way. We were in the 60s, late 60s and 70s, early 70s when this was going on. Was the loosest, promiscuous time that I can ever remember in my lifetime, and maybe in this entire century, maybe in many centuries for all I know.
Sodom and Gomorrah was the last time.
I think you're probably right.
Okay, donk.
Whatever happened to Gomorrah.
Here we go.
No.
That is what my brothers call me. It's an endearing term. My brothers call me that. That's true.
I love that women came on to me in the beginning. There were extras who worked on the TV show and occasional actresses. Girls would start coming up to the house, too, and they'd show up at the recording studio on the road, be all over the hotels, fans. But women, you have to remember, sometimes there would be 1,000 people in the lobby, fans screaming, waiting to meet me. Well, see, that's not out of context.
No, it isn't. Not at all.
If you take something else out of context, page 109, chapter
10.
There you go. This is out of context.
Out of context.
I was 21 years old. Uh-huh. My dick was always hard.
Uh-huh. And how many guys at 21 is it not? How many of you out there at 21 can say, nah, mine never got hard?
And I know Tony is carting that one up right
now. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. absolutely.
I mean, you tell me during those years when you guys were in college, what were you doing? Were you sitting around going, well, I don't know, I've got to go back. I got to go right back and read, let's see, is Genesis, Exodus, Deuteronomy? I can't remember how it goes. Bible school's next.
No.
Most of the guys I knew were like, you know,
why won't this
parties?
Damn thing ever relax?
Exactly.
But I didn't
and
realize.
I was nothing. I was nothing more than all American and red blooded and.
Liar, liar.
Yeah. No, babe. No, tell the truth.
I didn't realize you had a legendary penis, though.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, I've never said that to anybody.
Now that I've been on your show. You're the first guy that's ever said that to me.
Well, no, it's in the book.
Well, it's in the book, but we haven't discussed it on the radio.
Oh, you don't want to discuss it on the radio?
I wasn't actually planning it 9 o'clock in the morning discussing my penis. But
We won't.
Larry Keenan bringing up the other night?
No.
When's a good time talking about your penis?
Well, I think it's kind of an after-hours discussion, don't you?
Actually, you do have to go, too, so we don't want to hold you up anymore.
I want to thank you guys. It's great. I was listening to you on the way over here in the car, and I thought that your comments and your astute observation about the Timberwolves was absolutely right on the money. And, I know this whole town's really going to be sorry to see them go.
Yeah.
It was great having a semi-pro team here, wasn't it?
It was.
There'll be more people at the airport to send you off.
No.
The name of the book, Come On, Get Happy, Fear and Loathing on the Partridge Family Bus, David Cassidy, tonight at 7:30 at Bordy. You really like this book store, by the way, because they have their own cappuccino bar.
This is a great record, by the way.
Here it is, ladies and gentlemen. David Cassidy, we want to thank you very much. It's an honor having you on the show.
Thank you very much.
Good job, Tom. 9:05 now. It's 5 minutes after 9. KQRS. David Cassidy, tonight at Borders at 7:30 in Minnetonka. So you're a very honest person. It's nice having honest people on the show. As a matter of fact, he's got to run out the door right now. He's a good guy.
Yeah, I mean, very much so.
Did you guys think that...
Well, you know what you can tell about a lot of people? Like some of the jerks that we have come in here, they won't talk to you unless they're on the...
Take care.
Have a good time tonight.
Unless the mic is on. But he's very, I mean, he's very easy to get along
with. He was no Rich Hall.
He hasn't aged at all.
That's what I was wondering. Great. Here's a guy, he's older than I am, and he looks like he's about 20. He looks very, very good. The book is interesting, though. We just point out a couple of things, obviously, to kind of pull his tip there a little bit. But the book is very interesting. David Cassidy, Come On, Get Happy, Fear and Loathing on the Partridge Family Bus is the name. It's interesting having people in from your youth, even though he's only a little bit older than I am. We used to watch that Partridge Family. It's on Nickelodeon every night now.
Well, we were talking about that and how weird it was when he was in Florida. Doing What Would You Do? And, you know, David Cassidy and, you know, he and I are basically peers, you know, probably the same age. And I had never seen his show. And yet the younger people working on the show, I'm talking about people in their early 20s, they knew every show.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so there's like a whole gap there, and then the people pick it up again on Nickelodeon.
Always a pleasure to have people of David Cassidy's ilk on the show.
What a good guy.
He's a very nice man. Very nice man. It's 9:07 now, 7 minutes after 9 o'clock. Wally Walker's coming up in a couple of minutes. He's got the Doors. Also, brand new music from the Meat Puppets called Backwards.